I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is the Tech Central Show, brought to you today by MTN Business. Visit mtnbusiness.co.za to learn more about the company's services. Now, you can subscribe to the Tech Central Show on youtube.com/techcentral, or why not subscribe to our newsletter at techcentral.co.za/newsletter and get all the latest business technology news from South Africa and across the region at 5 a.m. every morning. Now, Paratus Group is a fast-growing telecommunications operator that I believe got its start in Namibia, but which has now expanded to become something of a regional powerhouse in the telecommunications industry. And I've been looking forward to some time to learning more about the company, its history, and also its expansion plans. So I'm very pleased to welcome Martin Cox into the studio now. Martin is the group's chief commercial officer. Martin joined Paratus in 2021, but has been in the telecommunications industry for several decades, and he's worked for a number of well-known organizations in the industry, including Dimension Data and Neotel, which of course now is known as Liquid. Martin, welcome. Thanks for making time.
Thank you for having me.
Great. Martin, so you're a fairly recent recruit to the Paratus team, but you do know the company's history. Tell us a bit about Paratus. It started in Namibia. It's quite an entrepreneurial business. Tell us about those early days and how the business has grown.
Yes, Paratus is 21 years old, and it's founded by, there's five original founders. Mm-hmm. Three were Namibian, one from Cape Town, and one from Germany.
Okay.
And what happened is the founders were working for ISP in Namibia back in 2002, 2003, and decided to set up their own new company. And due to various restraint of trade that they had, they mm-hmm. couldn't set up in competition in Namibia. And so they trekked north to Angola.
Okay.
Which was, back in 2004 was, very entrepreneurial. And, Angola, was going through its own issues at that time. And they literally started with nothing. And they walked the streets and they started selling whatever they could, whether it was laptops, printers, IT services, whatever. And ultimately that grew into an ISP. And from the ISP grew into an infrastructure-based company laying down its own fiber. And obviously that's happened over the last 21 years. And after the first 12 months or so, when the straight trades of some of the founders were finished, some of them went back to Namibia and some stayed in Angola. And then in Namibia also started an ISP, providing various data services. Obviously, internet was very expensive back in those days. And due to the cost of internet, started to build out their own fiber. Mm-hmm. And Paratus today, 21 years later, is very much a fiber company. We lay our own fiber. We have overlay microwave networks. And we also have four data centers. And from the early days of starting in Angola to growing into Namibia, we're now in seven different countries, which include DRC, South Africa, Botswana, Zambia, and Mozambique. Mm-hmm. So, we've got a very unique footprint. We're very strong on the West Coast, on Angola, DRC, Namibia, where there's not many companies are. And we're expanding all the time.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating. So has this business been bootstrapped by the founders? Or what sort of funding rounds have you had along the way?
Very much bootstrapped by the founders. I think they've mortgaged everything. I think they've mortgaged themselves, their wives, their families, their houses, and the dog. Very much organic. Mm-hmm. The company has grown step by step. I think in a very kind of modest way. But what happens is after 21 years, those small steps have really created, a very large company. And mm-hmm. Paratus today has over 700 employees across seven countries. And, each of our operations is profitable. We don't have a lot of debt in across the company. We have some local debt in each operation. Yes, and there's been one or two acquisitions, but mainly driven by organic growth.
So is it primarily a wholesale business, or do you provide services to businesses and end user residential customers as well?
So the Paratus model is that in-country operating companies. They provide everything from fiber to the home, SME connectivity to large enterprises, the banks, the big retailers, and also public sector. Mm-hmm. And then I run what we call the group sales team, and we do an overlay sales. We very much focus on the wholesale sector. So in country, we're looking at the, you know, the Angolan banks, the Namibian banks, the Angolan and Namibian retailers and businesses and enterprises. And then, you know, overlaid, we sell services to international carriers that have multinational clients themselves who happen to have a presence in one of our countries, and we provide them, you know, last mile layer two services or DIA services now with SD-WAN. Mm-hmm. So we have a very healthy relationship with other carriers. We buy from them, they buy from us. And in country, we sell everything from fiber to the home up to large enterprises.
Wow. So paint me a picture of what your infrastructure looks like, what you have on the ground in the various markets around Southern Africa.
So we started really laying last mile networks and metro fiber rings. So that was, I think, the core of Paratus. And what happened, we leased a lot of capacity between the countries. Mm-hmm. So we would lease from, you know, various incumbents or whoever had fiber. And the last few years, we found that some of those price points have been very high, and we've started to a strategy of linking up all of our operations with our own fiber. And in this regard, we've just completed a 1,500-kilometer build all the way from Swakopmund through Windhoek to Gaborone to Johannesburg, and that links up to the Google Equiano cable, which was landed last year. And is now live, and we were the landing partner for the Equiano cable in Namibia. Mm-hmm. So that now, surprisingly enough, is the lowest latency route between Johannesburg and Europe up to Lisbon and London, probably saving about 10% on latency.
Interesting.
So for any carriers and companies that are seeking the lowest latency, and this is banking, financial institutions particularly, mm-hmm. that we can provide something that's totally unique, is because there's not many operators that are licensed in Namibia, in Botswana, in South Africa. And that network also expands from and extends from Johannesburg through to Camden, through Eswatini to Maputo. So we've really already got our east to west route all the way from Swakop to Maputo, and Maputo picking up the Two Africa cable, Seacom cable, etc.
How do you build a route like that? Do you dig a trench and put fiber in it and link it all the way from Joburg to Swakopmund? It's a hell of a distance.
So in Namibia and Botswana, we don't have the same issues that maybe face in South Africa. Is we tend to use aerial fiber.
Okay.
And so we put the poles and we string fiber. You know, there's very low incidence of vandalism or you know, theft. You know, there are incidences of bushfires and stuff, so mm-hmm. they have to be well maintained and cleared. But so we've strung that fiber, and within the cities, we either bury fiber or we string it, depending on the different city. I mean, mm-hmm. some cities are expanding quite quickly, so actually, when you bury a fiber, it's a problem because there's a lot of road widening, developments, and cities are expanding and improving all the time. You know, so sometimes you have to move your fiber, and sometimes it's easier to do that when it's aerial fiber mm-hmm. rather than trench fiber.
Mm-hmm. And having a diverse route through Botswana, and anyone who's driven that route knows there's nothing there. It's just bush from Gaborone all the way up to Namibia, basically. But having that diverse route, presumably, also helps if there's a national cable problem in South Africa, because the current infrastructure sees, I think, ISPs connecting down the N1 to Cape Town and then onto the Equiano system. So this provides a diverse route in case there's an issue in South Africa.
Yes, definitely. I mean, I think one of the highest traffic routes in the whole of Africa is probably Johannesburg to Cape Town, and there's also Johannesburg to Durban, mm-hmm. Linking up to the West Coast and East Coast submarine cables. You know, my guess is that there might be something like 30 terabits of data going between Joburg and Cape Town, but, you know, it's pure kind of guesswork on my side. And ultimately, they all connect up to cable landing stations. And those cable landing stations are in Azefontein or Melbostrand, you know, so there is a concentration of, you know, of those cables and those meeting points. So our route from Joburg through Botswana through Namibia is totally diverse. And not only that, it is the lowest latency route, you know, saving 10% on latency. So I think it's incredibly relevant. And from a commercial aspect, we're trying to price that at similar to the Joburg-Cape Town route for express services up to Europe, up to Lisbon and London. So I think it's a compelling offer. And I think that the recent outages yesterday of the various submarine cables just underline the importance of, you know, having multiple different routes, not being over reliant on any single cable landing station or any single cable or any single terrestrial route. You know, diversity is super important because the internet is so prevalent in our lives today.
We're probably quite lucky, and we should probably mention that we're recording this interview on Friday, the 15th of March. this incident in West Africa occurred on Thursday, the 14th of March, and this episode is going to be published sometime next week or this week when you're listening to it, I guess. What is the impact of that outage in West Africa on the region? And you guys must have had a pretty busy day yesterday.
Yeah, I think it's been quite busy, not just yesterday, but also recently. You know, a few weeks ago, there were cable cuts in the Red Sea, affecting Seacom and a number of other cables going through the Red Sea. And, you know, and that's, you know, every time a cable gets cut, then traffic has to default over a different cable. And yesterday, there were incidents and outages on the West Coast, and we understand this is up around Ivory Coast, area of West Africa. Definitely our cables from DRC South to Cape Town are unaffected, so they're still working. So it's really from something around West Africa and up into Europe. We're still trying to find out exactly what went wrong. But luckily, you know, Paratus, we are very keen believer on, you know, having capacity on multiple routes. And the Equiano cable is still up and running all the way to Europe. So for us, it just defaulted. We have that capacity. We have WAX capacity. We have SAT-3 capacity. We have SAX capacity. SAX is the South Atlantic cable that goes from Angola to Brazil and then Brazil up to Miami. And having those multiple different cables really meant that our customers remained up and running, that their businesses could operate. And that's just because of, you know, our belief in that diversity, you know, really matters.
Having that SAX cable, and particularly, I guess, the Equiano cable, having been built just in the last year or two, has had a huge impact on mitigating the impact of this particular cable break. Because if those two systems weren't in place, this would have been quite disastrous, wouldn't it?
We couldn't imagine, honestly, the impact of our business lives, of our personal lives. You know, and how much reliance we have on the internet and access to the internet. The Equiano cable is constructed quite far off the coast. Other cables, like the WAX cables, are quite close to the coast, and they land in literally every single country up the west coast of Africa. And so the trunk cable is very close to shore, and there's always the risk of fishing trawlers dragging their nets, pulling up cables, and the further out to shore, then the less risk that is. So again, it all comes back to having, you know, multiple different paths, multiple different, you know, routes to make sure that your customers are up and running at all times.
Yeah. But this Equiano cable is a very high capacity system. And Namibia is geographically is a big country, but economically is a fairly small market in the region. How did you convince Google to land their cable in Namibia?
Well, I think that credit goes to my colleagues. It was before I joined Paratus.
Sure.
And we got very, very, very convincing people at Paratus. And I think what happened is the architects of the Equiano cable did realize and did understand from a very early stage that the lowest latency route to Europe was actually through Botswana and Namibia, not through Cape Town. And I mean, because there's no real economic justification for landing a branch in Namibia. As you say, it's 2.5 million people, and relatively it's a very small country in Africa. But it's strategically located in that respect from a latency point of view. And latency really means, you know, it's about speed. Mm. It's about time. So it's the shortest path. Mm-hmm. And so traffic will get from Joburg to Europe 10% faster mm-hmm. than going via Cape Town,
sure.
roughly. And and our cable is up and running in the next couple of weeks. We've already got our first initial orders on the cable, so we're super excited about that. And we're super excited. It's a unique route. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. a route that no one else has. And as I say, we've got licenses in all of those countries, which other companies mm-hmm. just don't have.
And you've just completed a network in Zambia with the involvement of Meta Platforms as well. Tell us a bit about that infrastructure that you've built there.
Yes. Also, we're very proud of this particular build and project. Meta, which obviously is the owner of Facebook, they ran some programs to encourage the development of the internet in various African countries, and they recognized that, you know, funding, you know, and partnerships were very important for this. Mm-hmm. And what happens is often the capital cities and the major cities have reasonably good fiber infrastructure these days. Fiber has been around for a very long time, you know, since the early 2000s. But what happens is there's not a lot of fiber in the secondary cities. Mm-hmm. And this project was about linking 10, building fiber in 10 secondary cities. So the much smaller cities and towns, and to improve the access to the internet. So what happened is we did a project with Meta in a partnership with them. We've literally just finished the construction of 700 kilometers of metro fiber and last mile fiber to make sure that those 10 secondary cities have a very good access, and that fiber is available, you know, not just to businesses, but, you know, to SMEs, to public sector institutions, to communities in and around those towns. Mm-hmm. So we're super happy about that, because obviously that impacts, you know, the lives of the citizens in those towns and cities.
And what was Meta's involvement? Did they bring I remember joining a press conference a couple of years ago where they spoke about some advanced technologies they have for deploying aerial fiber from poles. It was quite interesting, using robotics and stuff. were they using some of that technology? How involved was Meta in that deployment?
The project and program came really from the initiative of Meta. And, you know, I think they approached Baratus. I think we're known in Zambia as a quality fiber network operator. And there's a number of companies, and I think they'd done some other projects with some other operators in different countries. And I think that they wanted to, you know, partner as many people as they could. And, mm-hmm. and we're very honored that a partnership that they chose Paratus to partner with in Zambia. Mm-hmm. We didn't in the end use, I mean, they do have some incredible technologies, but ultimately we strung aerial fiber. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we managed also to partner with, you know, one of the large mobile operators there also, because there's no point to overbuild in fiber, you know, because that just duplicates cost. And we'd rather partner and do co-builds with other operators where we can. Mm-hmm. So ultimately, that was a very, you know, it's a very good project. We completed it recently, and I think we put some press out last week.
Yeah. Okay. And then infrastructure in South Africa. I know you've tended to focus more in other Southern African markets, but just a picture of what infrastructure you have in the South African market, and what are your plans for growth in this market?
So in South Africa, we're very much a satellite focused. Operation for Paratus South Africa. And I think it's worthy to note that Paratus is a very large provider of satellite right across Africa. Mm-hmm. You know, I think today we have about 6,000 VSAT sites, you know, across 9 or 10 different beams. We have earth stations in Angola, Namibia, Botswana, South Africa. We just constructed the OneWeb earth station in Angola. Mm-hmm. OneWeb is a LEO constellation, and they have about 7 earth stations across the whole of Africa, and we just finished the construction in partnership with them in Angola. Mm-hmm. And in South Africa, our local team here has just finished the construction of a very, very large teleport on 60,000 square meters of land. Wow. By Irene, mm-hmm. the back of St. George's Hotel. And really the idea is we do believe that satellite has a strong future in Africa. It definitely takes it's evolving, the satellite technology. And VSAT historically is very good at narrow band applications. So it's very good for ATMs, very good for point of sale devices. So we've had incredible success in South Africa providing solutions where with VSAT, as long as you've got a generator on site or some level of your own power on site, that those services will always remain running. Mm-hmm. And what we've found is that our customers here, the retailers, the banks that use our services, are up and running even notwithstanding load shedding. Mm-hmm. And the load shedding has had quite a negative impact on fiber networks, on microwave and wireless networks, you know, coupled with battery theft and vandalism. And the good thing, as long as the security, our customers manage their own security and manage some power on site, is that VSAT is always up and it's always running, which means that our customers can trade, mm-hmm. no matter what the circumstances. As long as there's petrol in generator or diesel in generator, they're trading, they can make business, you know, they don't have to close their stores. And that's the power of VSAT. People think, I used to think that VSAT was very old technology, why is it relevant? But it's incredibly relevant, and we've been growing at a very fast rate, enough for us to put in a brand new teleport mm-hmm. in Pretoria, and that's run by Parata South Africa, and Kelly Carlson, our local MD here, has done a superb job.
Mm-hmm. So, I'm interested, is it a solution in areas where fiber hasn't been deployed yet, or is it more seen as a backup to where fiber has been deployed already?
It's a bit of both. Definitely, I would say, you know, at the end of the day, there's nothing faster than speed of light, you know, which obviously fiber is. But those networks have, and we've read about various operators have various instabilities. And just like we talked about diversity on submarine cables and different terrestrial routes to access those submarine cables, also customers need diversity, even in the cities, of different providers. You know, even if they have, you know, two fiber lines, you know, they generally it's advisable to have different, you know, fiber providers in case one does have a network issue. And our VSAT is very much provided in the cities, an overlay redundancy, and which has been invaluable to many of our customers. And in the rural and remote areas, the business case for laying fiber runs out very, very much at the edge of the city. Mm-hmm. There are some tremendous initiatives that are going on at the moment in rolling out fiber in, you know, some of the townships like Khayelitsha and Soweto and Mitchell's Plain. And I really, you know, kudos to those companies. I know some of the guys involved in that. I think they're doing a tremendous job. But in terms of fiber into the rural areas and you know, where it's really countryside and, you know, it's very hard for an operator to justify putting fiber because there's no return on that. Microwave networks also provide a level of service, and as do the mobile networks. Mm-hmm. But again, your 4G, 5G is more prevalent in the cities than in all of these remote areas, and they do get impacted by electricity issues, you know, battery theft and all of that. And so VSAT very much does have a role, whether it's in lodges, tourism trade, whether it's commercial farmers, small communities, you know, public sector applications. It provides some level of connectivity, mm-hmm. and something's always better than nothing. I mean, VSAT isn't the best for surfing the net, but it's very good at those narrow band applications, point of sales, and keeping businesses up and running. And it does provide enough bandwidth to be able to watch Netflix and do some surfing. It's just not as fast as other technologies.
Yeah. Do you see as Paratus, do you see fiber opportunities in South Africa, or do you think the market is quite saturated already?
Yeah, I mean, I was one of the fans of Neotel back in 2004, and you know, there's, you know, I don't know how big that fiber network is, and DFA and Frogfoot and MFN, you know, they've been on OpenServe, you know, they've all got tremendously large and good networks in South Africa, you know, and many other are the operators too, so. you know, I think for us, they're very well, you know, those companies are very well funded. They're very, you know, they're financially strong. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't really see a need for us to go and compete in that. There's enough fiber operators. I think it's just a question of, you know, whether there's different ways for them to get into the more rural areas of South Africa and connect some of those more rural communities and, you know, schools and really to uplift those communities. I think that is really the question. Mm-hmm. But as I said, the business case runs out as soon as you hit the countryside.
Yeah. So what are the most exciting markets for you at the moment? Where are you focusing your investments and what are your plans next? Are you looking to expand into more territories in Africa over time?
We launched in DRC. Our last venture, I think, was really in the DRC. We launched a year ago. Mm-hmm. The World Bank had funded a cable from Mwanda, which is on the coast, by the WAX cable landing station, into Kinshasa. Kinshasa has something about 20 million people. Mm-hmm. And once that network was constructed, they ran a tender for various operators who will operate and maintain it for 15 years. Paratus was chosen after quite a rigorous RFP process, which took about 9 months or a year. And obviously we were chosen based on technical ability and a commercial model that we proposed. So in essence, that's a public-private partnership between the World Bank, Paratus, and the government of the DRC. Mm-hmm. And it's about 650 kilometers long cable. And we're really providing a lot more affordable internet into Kinshasa. You know, internet was expensive. We managed to significantly bring down the cost of internet and the cost of connectivity. We've got a team of about 20 people in Kinshasa. We've got technicians in every town along that route just to make sure that the route is clean. The community knows that that it's a fiber optic cable, it's not copper cable. Copper cables can get stolen. So very much we've run an awareness program and educational program about what this fiber is. It runs along the railway line, and we've now partnered with all of the major operators. We're very much a wholesale offering, so we provide service to the mobile operators, to the ISPs, and we've in the last 12 months we've had just an awesome take up on that fiber. I personally spend about a week every 6 weeks in Kinshasa, so I think we've learned a lot. It took us about a year to put the network up, and we've been operating for a year. So the last couple of years, we've learned a lot about the DRC. Every country has its nuances, you know. And I think we're very proud of what we've managed to achieve. And yeah, we see further expansion in DRC definitely. You know, based on the success and the learnings that we've had there.
Do you find it's getting easier to do business in these markets? I mean, historically, some of these markets are very underdeveloped. You often run into regulatory issues, political issues going into markets. Is it becoming easier to do business in Southern Africa?
I think if you ask the founders of Paratus, you know, whether it's Barney, the chairman, or Skulk, the CEO, or Rolf, the CTO, Mars, head of marketing, I think they'll all tell you is that one of Paratus's really real abilities is we're very good in difficult countries.
Okay.
Yeah. And I think it's probably from the DNA of setting up a company 21 years ago in Angola. Mm-hmm. You know, and even in Namibia as a small country, Botswana, relatively small country and relatively small market. And we developed incredibly successful companies there. And I think that's really due to the people that we've got. Paratus is a real family. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got some incredible MDs in our opcos. You know, we Paratus ethos is that we work hard, but we probably play harder than we work.
Okay.
And I think that's a key. You know, there's an enormous culture. It's a family. It's we have a lot of fun together. Mm-hmm. You know, and we. You know, when it's light, we work, and when it's dark, we play.
Right.
And,
there's no ivory towers.
No, I mean, everything's done on WhatsApp. I mean, for us to take decisions is minutes or hours. It's not even days, weeks, and it's certainly not months and years. We're incredibly agile, and I think that's helped that helps us go into these markets, and we very much, we support each other. There's no blame culture in Paratus. If someone's in the shed or done something wrong, you know, colleagues are there, say, how do we help you? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's a very, you know, we're very accountable as individuals, and we've got some tremendous colleagues, and I think that's what makes us strong as a team.
Where do you think this business will be in 5 years from now?
We take everything step by step, and we take small steps. We're not a huge giant of a company, but equally we're not afraid. You know, so we go take small steps. I think there's a lot more market share that we can focus on and target within each of our countries. So I think within the countries we're going to grow. And we are growing, you know, really well. We're publicly listed in Namibia.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah, so that entity, you know, the financials, we just released some financials there. We got tremendous revenue growth and EBITDA growth. And again, that's testament to Andrew Hall and his team in Paratus, Namibia. Yeah, and we're growing in all of our markets, you know, step by step, every day, every week, every month. You know, we're growing, we're expanding our network. And that's, you know, all of the profits in the companies are reinvested back into CapEx so we can grow the network and we can keep investing in the markets that we're licensed in. And that's also, you know, this is not a company that is, you know, the founders are not there, you know, just drawing dividends and sitting in a fancy house or anything like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, they are happiest in the trench themselves.
Right.
You know, you'll find our founders in shorts and plackies and in the trench and probably with a beer in their hand.
Right.
You know, and that's where they're happiest. And I think that's part of the success of Paratus is that we, you know, we're very, you know, we're quite a humble team and, you know, we get stuck in and, you know, once it's in Ivory Towers and we get ourselves out there, we travel a lot, and we support our in-country companies. Mm-hmm. And I think that support is also felt by our entities.
Yeah. Sounds like a great culture. Great, Martin, it's been fantastic to get some insights into a homegrown company, if I can call it that, Paratus Group. You are the Chief Commercial Officer. Thank you so much for speaking to Tech Central today, and thank you for your insights. Much appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.